Fan on Demand. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back in Lakeland, Florida. This is the Jeff Blair Show, brought to you by Rogers Check-In. Another Rogers small business advantage. The Detroit Tigers are on the field going through their warm-ups. The Toronto Blue Jays team bus should be arriving soon, or perhaps it's arrived already. A change for the Blue Jays. Marcus Stroman was originally scheduled to start today against the Tigers, against Justin Verlander. He will now pitch tomorrow at home against the Tampa Bay Rays. It will be a bullpen day in Lakeland for the Blue Jays. Todd Redmond getting the start. Brett Cecil, Chad Jenkins, Aaron Loop, Neil Wagner, John Stilson as well, a name to keep an eye on. He has been very impressive. A little bit of control trouble, but very impressive in spring training. He is a pitcher that has put himself on the radar as far as John Gibbons is concerned. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Mike Wilner, Jerry Howarth, and our next guest, the newest member of our Blue Jays broadcast team, and a man that I've got to say, I'm not surprised that I'm seeing Joe Siddall at spring training. I always thought I'd see Joe Siddall in a uniform managing a team in spring training. Joe Siddall, when he was at the Montreal Expos, one of the players, the Felipe Alou, and I remember the day telling a bunch of us as writers, and it was a day when you caught Denny Boucher, Joe, and it was the Canadian battery, and Felipe Alou was making the point, Joe Siddall, someday he's going to manage in the majors. I'm glad you're here in the booth. Welcome.
Thanks very much, Jeff.
How did you get to the point where you're a broadcaster? What led you your path to this job?
Well, this all happened very fast. I've been working with the Tigers for the last 12 years, living in Windsor, crossing over Detroit. It's a very close commute for me, so I've been helping the Tigers just at home games with pregame batting practice, helping the hitting coaches with cage work and all that sort of thing. And it's been a great way for me to stay involved in the game, yet I still wanted to be home and be the stay-home dad and coach my kids' teams. And I've been able to do that since my playing career finished, so it's been a wonderful transition from playing for me. Always thinking I'd keep that foot in the door and perhaps get into coaching, managing something one day. And this transpired very fast. Some of the listeners have probably heard we lost our 14-year-old son to cancer back in early February, just not very long ago. And the reason I say things transpired very fast, I had talked to our Ron Colangelos, our communications guy in Detroit.
Right.
An old friend of mine from back in the Felipe Alou days, 1990. We played in West Palm Beach, and Ron was the general manager there. And I've talked to him in the past couple of years about dabbling in the broadcasting area as well. Knowing, though, that my intent, my full plan was coaching my kids throughout, and I was going to coach my young son, Kevin, who we just lost, through high school. He was in grade 9 this year. I was going to coach him and stay home and be with him for the next 4 years. Our other kids are older. We have a daughter, Mackenzie, that's in grade 12. We'll be going off to university next year. And then two other older kids that are away at college. So, unfortunately, our lives changed dramatically with the loss of Kevin, and our other kids are going to be away at school. It certainly frees us up to perhaps pursue opportunities for me career-wise. And I had talked to Ron about maybe dabbling in that in Detroit. But ironically, I received an email from Jerry Howarth. It was a condolences email after the loss of Kevin. Jerry read Bob Elliott's column. And it was just a condolences email. And I replied to him to thank him for it. And at the very end, and I still don't know why I put this last line, but I had just included, or maybe we'll see you in the broadcast booth one day. Because I had said, we'll see you in Detroit this summer. And I said, or maybe in the booth one day. And he replied right away and said, how about right now? And I kind of read this email like, what? So I kept reading, and he continued to tell me about Jack leaving and that the position that is open and that they're looking for a replacement. And I wasn't aware of any of this because, as you can imagine, our last 6 months has been very hectic and our lives were turned upside down. So I kind of looked at my wife and I said, I might have an opportunity here. What do you think? She kind of looked at me and she, I mean, again, we're still in a fog. Our lives have been turned upside down. And she just said, whatever, you know, like, go, sure, why not? We didn't think anything was going to come of it. So Jerry had said, I could contact the program director, Don Collins, if you wish. So I replied to him and I said, sure. And we exchanged lots of emails with information, what it might entail and the whole bit. And he did. One thing led to another. Long story short, Don contacts me. We exchanged several emails. He phoned, long conversation. wanted me to come down to Florida, do a couple games, see how things go. I think he had a list of a couple of people that were going to come to Florida. I think I was on your show that day, the Monday morning, and asked me to come down to Florida, did a couple games, and I was offered the job.
Why? You join a long list of catchers in this broadcast booth, right? I mean, Morris kind of butted in as a pitcher, but I mean, Ashby, Buck, Greg Zahn is clearly around. I'm sure J.P. Arencibia thought last year there were too many catchers at times. Why do catchers generally make such good managers and such good broadcasts? Because there's a ton of catchers who are broadcasting. I mean, one of my favorites, Ray Fosse. What is it about the view of the game from behind the plate, do you think, that lends itself to that?
I think it's exactly that. It's the perspective of the game. The field is in front of you. But more importantly, I've always said the catcher's the quarterback on the field. The catcher is running the game. When I say running the game, you're putting the fingers down. Your job with your pitcher, the pitcher-catcher relationship, which I talk about a lot, is crucial to a ball game. And I always say as a catcher, you don't want that pitcher to have to think a lot out there. You want him. We're counting on his arm. I'm going to call the pitches. I'm going to do the homework as a catcher to understand the strengths and weaknesses of all the hitters. Of course, knowing the strengths and weaknesses of your pitcher, understanding the game. So you're doing a lot of the studious part of the game. So in a sense, you're in control of every pitch of the game. Not to mention you've got bunt defenses. You've got first and third defenses, where your defense alignment is going to be. So there's a lot of things holding runners that you are an integral part of all of that in a game. So you're essentially an extension of the manager that's sitting in the dugout.
Do you watch a game differently from the press box because you've been behind the plate? Will you look for things that perhaps a pitcher won't or a position player won't?
I think so. I think for sure I do. And almost again, and you mentioned almost from a manager's perspective also.
Right.
But being up here gives you a great view because you do see the whole field. I watch the catcher where he sets up. I like to comment on the pitch sequences, how perhaps we got a hitter out. I know the other day with Drew Hutchison pitching, I thought I saw a great sequence. He got to a 1-2 count through his hard slider down and away that the hitter laid off of, came back with a 94-mile-an-hour fastball in the inside corner. So I like to comment on those sequences and why that's so difficult on a hitter.
We're joined in the broadcast booth at Lakeland by Joe Siddle. He is the new voice you will hear all summer long on our Blue Jays broadcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We will have the game this afternoon, 1 o'clock, first pitch, the Toronto Blue Jays and Detroit Tigers live from Dunedin. We're going to take your calls for Joe Siddle. He's been here all spring. He's certainly seen more of this team than I have. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. If your boss doesn't let you use the phone while you work, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Use the hashtag Blair Show, and we will get you on. So I think I'm just doing rough math here, Joe, but my guess is I covered... you know what? I only covered 36% of your plate appearances in the major leagues. I thought it was more than that.
There weren't a ton of plate appearances.
158, and I know... You know what? I covered that's 20%. I covered 35 of them. You had a couple of cups of coffee in the NHL or in Major League Baseball, a couple of stints with the Expos, one with the Marlins and one with the Tigers. You had a 13-year career in the minors. What eventually, what made you decide? I guess it was at the age of 32 that this is it. I need to move on. Was it family more than anything else, or was there a thought of immediately getting into managing, or how did that transpire?
No, it was 100% family. Mm-hmm. I was a minor league free agent after getting let go by the Tigers after the 99 season. I became a minor league free agent. I was thinking of calling it quits at that time as a family. We had our youngest, Kevin, was actually born in February of 99. And I thought, I'm a minor league free agent again. And the way I thought my perspective was going to be, if a team calls, maybe it happens for a reason that maybe this is my call to give this another shot. And sure enough, the first day I was a minor league free agent, I got a call from the Red Sox. So I just thought the writing was on the wall. I should give this another shot. So I did. I went to Pawtucket, AAA. Went to spring training with the Red Sox first, but ended up in Pawtucket, AAA. And then throughout the first couple months of the season, it just became, I was far away from home. I was flying home from the Boston area on an off day to be with my wife and my children, and flying back the next day. As you know, in the minor leagues, there's not a whole lot of days off. So it was just becoming increasingly difficult. And I think for my wife especially, too, with four young kids at home and a few of them are school age. And I think more importantly than that was that it was a call up to the major leagues in September was really not all that exciting or intriguing to me. It, to me, my mindset was that's just going to be another month away from home. So I think the light went on right there that, you know, maybe this is time. So ironically, I went in to retire to the field one day and I was in the lineup. So I decided to play my game and then I'll talk to the manager and go in his office after the game. Well, wouldn't you know it, as the story goes, the pitcher that day was Tomooka.
Okay.
And would you believe Tomooka threw a perfect game? So here I was going in to retire that day. Tomo throws a perfect game, which I caught. So, of course, there's a big celebration in the clubhouse after, which I couldn't announce my retirement that time and rain on that parade. So I waited. I came in the next day, and it was early June, first week of June, I believe. Came into the manager's office, said I was going home, and I went home. And it turned out to be the greatest decision because the kids were getting out of school in June, and I had the summer with them. And so, yes, family is totally the reason.
That's not a bad way to go out, catching a perfect game. And Tomooka's still, Tomooka's here, learning the knuckleball. You're going to have to tell me how a left-handed hitter, and we're joined by Joe Siddle on the Jeff Blair Show, how does a left-handed hitter get his first major league hit off Frank Tanana and his only major league home run off Jeff Fassero, both of whom are lefties? How does that work out?
I think they just hit my barrel. I don't know. Every squirrel finds a nut.
We are joined by Joe Siddle in the broadcast booth again. By the way, I know you're dying to hear this. It's not a particularly gorgeous day in Florida. It's a slightly chilly 61 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's overcast in Lakeland. But it usually is overcast in the morning in Lakeland at times. I'm sure the sun will peek through. Joe, a lot of talk obviously around this team right now about Irvin Santana. As the days go on, it appears as if more teams get involved with Irvin Santana, lessening the likelihood that he will join the Blue Jays. I've got to ask you, this rotation, have you seen enough in camp to tell you that this is the type of rotation that can compete in the AL East without an addition? Maybe not Irvin Santana, but without an addition.
I think it's going to be difficult. I think the only two names right now they can use a ink pen to write in is R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley. I think the question marks surrounding Brandon Morrow. Again, I'm learning this team, but injuries and lots of them to Brandon Morrow over the last few years. Hasn't pitched a ton. Can you get 175-plus innings out of a guy like that? I'm sure you can. I'd be hesitant and reluctant to think so. He could prove us all wrong, and hopefully he does, because he's going to need to for this team to have any success. The back end of the rotation, I mean, Jay Happ was kind of penciled in as the fourth starter going into spring training. Obviously, he has not pitched very well at all, and he's got the injury now. I think the best case for this club would be that Jay Happ gets healthy and pitches really well the last couple of weeks of spring training here and can kind of be a solid kind of four starter. I think picking up Irvin Santana would be wonderful because you've got a veteran major leaguer that's going to give you innings, I think, to be in that fourth and maybe Jay Happ fifth slot. And then you can put some of these kids, like a Hutchison and Strome, put these kids in Buffalo where they can, again, continue to hone their craft and get some experience. Because, again, pitching is not just about throwing fastballs and sliders and locating them. There's a lot going on in the baseball field, and especially in a Major League Baseball game, the game speeds up. And you're talking about holding runners now. You're talking about fielding your position. You're talking about studying hitters. There's so much more that goes into it than just your actual pitches that I think these young kids, if they could use some time in AAA, would be beneficial to the organization.
Drew Hutchison, according to John Gibbons, essentially has to pitch his way off the team right now. I know we've talked, best case scenario, he starts at AAA. But have you seen something from him that suggests that he might be able to survive if he does start the year in the majors, because a lot of it for him is going to be survival, especially in that first month?
I have seen enough, because what I've seen out of Drew Hutchison is, and probably from the first time I saw him in a game, was the maturity, the demeanor. He's got confidence, and I think he really trusts his stuff. He's got good stuff, but I think there's a guy out there that he trusts his stuff and he knows he has good stuff, and that goes a long way, because if you get a young pitcher like that that does get rattled a little bit, the other day he gave up a two-run homer, made really one bad pitch to Byron Buxton, but came back, did his job, and that shows me a lot, because a young guy there that doesn't get out of that trouble and that two runs turns into a few more hits and a few more runs, that's a guy that you really think needs more fine-tuning. Drew Hutchison, yeah, he's going to get thrown into the fire if he's in the major leagues to start the season. Right now, if that's the case, not a horrible thing. I think that's the guy that could probably do it right now. But Yeah, like to be solid 1 through 5, especially in this American League East, because those 4th and 5th starters need to win games for you, too.
Joe Siddle joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. We'll have the game Detroit Tigers, Toronto Blue Jays, Grapefruit League action at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. I think one thing, Joe, that not just people around the Blue Jays, but I talked to a couple of scouts from other teams who follow the Jays, a lot of people think this lineup, if it stays healthy, is the type of lineup that might be able, it might be able to pull out a win for a pitcher who has an ERA of 4.5, or maybe, you know, a guy like Irvin Santana, whose ERA, frankly, if he comes to Toronto, is probably going to be it's going to be a little heftier than it was last year in Kansas City. This is a good lineup, isn't it?
I think it's a great lineup, and you're right. That's the kind of lineup that can win you a 7-5 mm-hmm. game or an 8-6 game. And I mean, yes, once again, on paper, it's a big if staying healthy. And I understand that was a terrible situation last year, but I don't think any team in the major leagues can have success with the injuries that came upon this team last year. So yeah, absolutely, they have to stay healthy. If they do, that lineup, I'll take that any day. I think it's as good as any lineup in the American League.
Joe Siddle joins us in the booth. Let's go to Eddie in Fort Erie. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Joe Siddle and Jeff Blair. Go ahead, Eddie.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well. Say hi to Joe.
Hello again, Joe.
Morning, Eddie.
I wanted to ask you something as a proud Canadian myself, and I'm sure you are as well. I know you played in Montreal during your career, right?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, do you think one day we'll have a Major League Baseball team back in Montreal?
Well, I think any time a city in any sport has a Major League team and loses it, that's a big strike against. And to think a team's going to come back, number one, a lot has to happen. And I think a lot has to happen with Major League Baseball. A lot has to happen with dollar signs, I think, is a big factor in getting a team. Very difficult question. You would really need a lot of support to really sway Major League Baseball to think about bringing baseball back to Montreal. I would love to see it. Yeah, I think it was great having two Canadian teams, one in each league. But, yeah, not sure if that's going to happen again, Eddie.
Okay. Eddie, I got to tell you, spoke to someone the other day about the Montreal situation. And, I mean, I've been saying that to get a team back in Montreal, it's going to take roughly $1.2 billion to buy the team, build the stadium. And, you know, with all due respect to Warren Cromartie, whose heart is certainly in the right place, I need to see evidence that somebody in Montreal is willing to step up and put that money together. And I've got to tell you, Major League Baseball will not entertain a scenario where there are three or four owners combining to do that. Major League Baseball has sort of very quietly made it clear that if anything ever does happen, and Tampa Bay is the team that a lot of people look at as possibly being relocated, if anything does happen, it will be with a sole owner. And you know, speaking of this team, the Blue Jays, Rogers Communications, a publicly traded company, I'm not entirely certain that Major League Baseball would approve of another publicly traded company buying a franchise. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Should remind you, by the way, that the Blue Jays and New York Mets will play two exhibition games in Montreal at the end of the March. Joe Siddle will be there. I may go up as a fan to watch it. Brad in Cambridge, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, good morning, guys. Joe, welcome to Toronto, and, you know, what an incredible story that brought you here. Thank you for sharing that with us, and I want you to know that our thoughts and our prayers are with you. I mean that from my family, and on a personal note, I don't know you personally, but what I hear so far, I really like the combination of you and Jerry, and pulling for a great year for you guys.
Thanks very much. Looking forward to it.
Well, a question for you, Joe, and that is just regarding leadership on the Jays as an outsider coming into the organization. I know you've only been around us for a couple of weeks so far, but as a newbie to the team, what's your impression of the character of the Blue Jays? Do they have enough leadership? Is there character to be unselfish and to withstand the ups and downs of a 162-game season to do what needs to be done to win it all? And I'm not just talking about players, but coaches, managers, management, and all of that.
Good question. I spoke with Luis Rivera early in spring training, and I was just talking to him on the field one day about exactly what you're saying right now, the feel of spring training, because I had heard all about last year and, you know, guys coming in and out with the World Baseball Classic and all the different things. You acquired all these new players, yet really they didn't really have a spring training together to gel and get to know each other and get a feel for playing with one another. And his comment was, it's very different this spring. This spring, is more of an aggressive going after it type approach. He just feels the environment, the players themselves, the attitude is more of a go get it, go win this thing, as opposed to he thought last year was much more of a laid back, kind of waiting for something bad to happen. So he feels there's a 180 right there that he sees. Now, for me, coming from a coach, that speaks volumes, I believe, because there's a coach that's he's in it every day. He's in the clubhouse every day. He's on the field. He sees his hitters every day, his pitchers. So that, to me, said a lot. What I see is exactly that also. I see guys coming to work every day, doing the thing, because anybody that comes down to spring training and you watch them, we're watching the Tigers warm up in the field right now. They're doing their thing. They're doing the pregame. They're doing their fundamentals, their batting practice, their infield work. Guys go about their business, and that's what I'm seeing in Dunedin every day. But, you know, there's something about, I think, leadership, and we talk about team chemistry, and you know what really helps team chemistry is winning. So if the Toronto Blue Jays can get off to a good start, which we've all talked about, that helps team chemistry an awful lot. It helps leadership. It helps guys take on roles, and there's just a much better vibe in the clubhouse. So I think winning is going to, I think there are leaders out there, and I think you can talk all about team chemistry and people leading and who's going to lead by example, all these things. But you know what? Regardless of all that, they need to win. And when you win, things take care of themselves.
You know, Joe, I'm watching the Tigers take batting practice in infield right now, and I'm missing Jim Leland already. You were lucky you got to play for Felipe Alou. You got to play for Felipe in the minors as well. So you got to play for Felipe before he was in the majors, correct?
Yes, 1990 in the Florida State League.
And you also got to spend some time around Jim Leland. How similar are they?
Very similar. They're the old school type guys. And I always said Felipe was probably one of the best baseball minds I have ever been around. And that's why I call him a mentor. He taught me the game a lot, from especially behind the plate. And he was hugely responsible in my first big league call-up to Montreal, which I always say, if you don't get that first big league call-up, you know, I could have been a career minor leaguer. But I see a lot of similarities in Jim Leland, the way they see the game. What I think the way Felipe had such a profound effect on me is the way he saw the game on the field. And he would anticipate, like, you would never believe. I would see him move a fielder, move a shortstop a couple steps to his left, and, I mean, a pitch or two later, the ground ball was hit up the middle, and our shortstop just got to it. He did that so many times. We were just in awe of the way he saw the game. Leland's that old, scruffy type that knows the game very well because he's been around too. Very similar, but Felipe, to me, he was just always just unreal when it came to seeing the game.
One of the things, I had Pedro Martinez mention this to me one time, for a guy who made his mark in the major leagues as a hitter, Felipe really understood pitching. And if you look at the guys he turned into, he was the guy who looked at Pedro Martinez when everybody said, too small, can't start. Felipe said, he can start. He's the guy who took John Wetland and made him a better closer. He earned Mel Rojas, his nephew, about $25 million by pulling him out of the bullpen and making him a closer. I'm sorry, by pulling him out of the rotation and making him a closer. He looked at Jeff Fusaro, said, lefty specialist? I don't think so. He made him a ton of money as a starter. Why did Felipe understand so much about pitching? Was it just seeing so many different pitchers in different situations?
I think it's an unbelievable baseball instinct that he was blessed with. We always talk about evaluating players. I mean, players obviously have to have tools. They have to have the ability to learn and develop those tools. But that third and key one is always that baseball instinct. Really good players have that. Well, I think Felipe has that in the manager and the way he sees the game.
Tom in Waterloo, you're on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Say hello to Joe Siddle.
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Then you too, Joe. Welcome.
Morning, Tom. Thank you.
Okay.
I got it. By the way, Joe, I got to tell you, got to be careful with Tom. He's an old umpire.
Uh-oh.
Okay, here we go.
We're not talking about replay. You don't have a replay question, do you, Tom? Umpires don't make mistakes.
It doesn't bother me. Actually, they're perfect, aren't they? 17. Yeah. My question was going to be your feel of the camp, but you kind of went over that in the last caller. So I'm going to ask you on the two new catchers. How do you like them, and what do you see in those two new catchers? The feel of those guys around the pitching staff, how's that?
Well, I think DeAndre Navarro has had a lot of work to do. And as a catcher, I call a lot of homework. And that's not just on the field or in the bullpens catching guys, but a lot of sitting down, talking to guys at their lockers, talking to pitchers. Really important for a pitcher and catcher relationship, for that catcher to know what the pitcher's best pitch is, second best pitch, third best pitch, what he likes to do in certain situations, what's his put-away pitch. So there's a lot of that talk that you need to learn. And DeAndre Navarro's done a lot of work. I spoke with him the very first week of spring training, and he told me exactly that, that he is going to sit down and spend time with pitchers like that to really learn each guy. And it, each guy is different. Some guy might have fastball, slider, changeup. Some guy might be fastball, curveball, split. Some guy split might be the second best pitch, curveball, third best pitch. So you have to know those things, because I'm a big fan of win or losing games with your best pitch. So if you're in a crucial situation in the eighth inning, you're not going to lose the game by throwing your third best pitch in that situation. Those are reasons why Deonno Navarro has a lot of work to do. Spoke to him just recently, just a couple days ago, for a little update. And he said, yes, he's feeling pretty good. We've discussed the Mark Burley situation and the pace that Mark Burley likes to work at. He needs to know that about Mark Burley, and he learned it early on, that he likes to work fast. Get him the ball back, put the signs down. So I think he's doing a good job. I think the next 2 weeks is going to be crucial for Deonno Navarro to polish all that up and to be ready to break and go north with the pitchers he's going to go with, and knowing those guys like the back of his hand. And that's his job, and I think he'll do it and do it just well, just fine. I think the backup situation is, too. You got two guys both playing pretty well, quite frankly. I think they're both getting their hits, Eric Kratz and Josh Tolley. Different types of players. I think Kratz is a guy that is going to be more of a power guy that might run into one once in a while for you in that backup role, catching R.A. Dickey every fifth day. Josh Tolley is going to be a little bit more of a little singles guy, maybe doubles guy, get on base a little bit more. So different types of players. Be very interesting to see who they break with.
Tom, thanks so much for the call. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. The Blue Jays and Detroit Tigers. We'll have the game for you first pitch at 1:05 from Lakeland, Florida, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Tigers currently taking batting practice. The Jays bus is here, and the Jays will shortly be in the field as well. We anticipate being joined by a couple of Blue Jays players from the field once the Tigers finish their batting practice. We'll be back with more of Joe Siddle, brought to you by Rogers Check-In, another Rogers Small Business Advantage. This is the Jeff Blair Show, live from Lakeland, Florida.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back with the Jeff Blair Show, live from Joker Marchant Stadium in Lakeland, Florida, home of the Detroit Tigers, the spring home of the Detroit Tigers. The Blue Jays and Tigers will play today at 1 o'clock. Just watching Miguel Cabrera take batting practice. Torrey Hunter steps in, and as Torrey Hunter steps in, the music starts. Joe Siddle, you were just making a point about Miguel Cabrera just before we came back, watching him take batting practice.
He is a joy to watch, you know, being able to work with him on a daily basis in the cage and on the field. I was just commenting on his first round of batting practice. It's always the same in the cage. Everything is up the middle the other way, and of course, he goes the other way with a little more authority than most hitters, but it's just the game plan. It's that first round of getting loose. All you coaches out there, stay tuned. It's that first, keeping the hands inside, just working the middle of the field, trying to develop good habits, and then, of course, Miguel Cabrera takes it to another level when it's game time.
Are you hearing a lot of stuff from Kevin Seitzer that you like the new Blue Jays hitting coach? Because that's his mindset. And people talk about it all the time, but I watched batting practice the other day, and Moises Sierra, who has often been criticized for not necessarily being the most diligent worker, I'm watching his BP, center field, opposite field, next round he pulls.
Yes, and everything I'm hearing from Kevin Seitzer is exactly all of that. It's all very good stuff. I've been fortunate, again, to be with the Tigers the last 12 years, worked some great hitting coaches, Toby Hare and Lloyd McClendon last year. Learned more about hitting, I think, in these years. I wish I could have had it when I was playing. Maybe I could have played a few more years. But, yeah, it's all really good stuff, and I've talked to Kevin Seitzer about that, too. But, you know, Kevin Seitzer wants to make sure that we get something clear here. He's not teaching hitters to all hit to the opposite field. Mm-hmm. He is teaching an approach, a philosophy of thinking middle of the field. And what that does is it keeps our bat through the hitting zone a long time. When your bat's in the hitting zone a long time, where that bat makes contact with the ball will dictate where the ball goes. But by the bat being in the hitting zone, if you catch that ball a little deep, it'll go to the opposite field. If you catch it more middle, it'll go up center field. If you catch it out in front of your stance, it'll be a pull. But it's important that hitters don't pull the ball by pulling their shoulder out and coming around the ball, because your hands actually come away from you. The swing actually becomes longer and slower.
Joe Siddle joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. You're around this team a lot, the Tigers, the past couple of years. We talked a little bit about Jim Leland. How do you think Brad Ausmus is going to do as manager of this team? Different personality than Jim, and Joe, I mean, this is the Tigers team. Their window of opportunities been open for a while, but at some point they got to step through and win the World Series.
I think Brad Osmus is going to do just fine. I know Brad from a little while back, and you know, I think everybody knows his reputation, of course, of playing in the big leagues for so many years and being a defensive-type guy and an intellectual catcher as well, as most catchers are. You know that, Jeff.
Of course. That goes but, without saying.
Absolutely. But Brad Osmus is being handed a pretty nice team here, too. So you got a team that's been to the playoff for several years in a row here now. Obviously, they made quite a few changes, which is a bit of a philosophical change, I think. They've gone from that slugging, slow-moving team to more of a speed-type team where they're going to produce hopefully more runs in key situations. And I think the big issue there is you get to the playoffs, and we all know a lot of times it's moving a runner over or stealing a base or those little things that score that key run that changes a game. And that's what I think Dave Dombrowski's gone in that direction is in kind of thinking more of a speed game. But I think Brad Osmus, that's his game. He was a National League catcher most of his career, too, and that's his game, and he understands that game very well. I think he will utilize, because he's so smart, he'll utilize his players to the best of their abilities and maximize their potential. And I think Brad Osmus is going to do just fine as a first-time manager.
Joe Siddle joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Any question you have for Joe Siddle, feel free. Folks, you've seen a hell of a lot more of this team than I have. Dean and Keswick, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Say hello to Joe Siddle.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Jeff. Love the show.
Great. Good morning.
Welcome, Joe, and thank you for sharing. And know that my prayers and thoughts are with you and the family.
Thank you very much.
I have a question I've always wondered about, and that is, Joe, how much input does the catcher have on who is going to come up north with the team? Starting the year, is it just a manager and upper office, or do they really use the catcher for input? I'll hang up and have a listen.
Thanks, Dean.
In terms of which catcher they're going to choose?
No, in what input will a manager or coaching staff talk to a catcher before they, if there's a guy in the bubble, who, you know, will they say, who do you like, this guy or this guy?
Sure, great. Very good question. Thanks. I'm sorry, the music in the stadium here just went really loud as you're asking your question. I didn't quite catch it all. I think for sure I've been asked as a catcher in the past too, though, especially about pitchers and, you know, particularly what their ball is doing. You can watch a ball game and you can watch a pitcher, but you can't necessarily see the movement on pitches. And actually what's happened a lot of times, the hitter will dictate that if he's getting good swings off them. Then you can tell that the ball's probably not moving a whole lot or as much as they want. But the catcher is a perfect person to bounce that off of. Not so sure about positionally anywhere else in the field, but particularly about pitchers. And if you're talking about that maybe bubble bullpen guy, that sort of thing, a catcher's input can be very valuable to a manager.
And don't forget, by the way, John Gibbons is a former catcher, so I've got to think that he would know how to approach another catcher when it comes to making a decision. And I mean, Joe, when you look at this team, I tried to sit down the other day and figure out how many jobs are up for grabs, and really, I think Eric Kratz has got the number two job. It certainly seems as if the Jays are giving him every chance to break camp with them. As far as the bullpen goes, I guess it just comes down to how many relievers they want to take. Really, to me, the positions right now that are open are the fourth and fifth. No, I don't even think the fourth spot. I think the fifth spot is open right now. Do you see anybody having a leg up in that area?
Well, I think the Irvin Santana sweepstakes will answer a lot of those questions, but exactly. I think the leg up is Drew Hutchison for sure. Depends on how Jay Happ comes back. He's probably got a couple weeks to really prove himself that, A, he's healthy, and, B, he can pitch effectively. I don't know about the Dustin McGowan experiment and trying to make him fifth starter. A lot of injuries. That's kind of a scary scenario, I think. So, and, you know, I think the Draybacks, sure, we've heard Marcus Stroman's name. I mean, I think Marcus Stroman needs to go to AAA and pitch some more. That's a guy that I don't think you want to rush. We are certainly, I think, going to see him in Toronto. The other position is very interesting to me is second base. Brian Goins is, by all accounts, kind of being handed this job. Now, I don't think any job is handed to anyone, but it's pretty much his job to lose. And I would like to see a little more out of Ryan Goins right now. I mean, we've heard great defense. I'm watching him at the plate thinking, I don't know, about an everyday second baseman in the major leagues. And I understand you can have a bit of a hole at the bottom of the lineup, but this is also the American League. You don't want too much weakness down there.
And just to Joe's point, after Sunday's game in Kissimmee, there was a play that was not made. Now, it was a fairly tough play, but there was a play that was not made by Ryan Goins. He charged in the ball, threw the ball, pulled Jose Reyes off the bag. And in John Gibbons' post-game news conference or post-game media briefing, he was asked a variety of questions about a variety of other things. None of us had actually seen that play because we were down in the clubhouse waiting to do interviews. And John leaned against the fence and looked at us and then unsolicited said, there was a play that was not made. And he brought up Ryan Goins not making the play. And you could tell, and he wasn't throwing Ryan Goins under the bus, Joe, but you could tell what he was saying. And that was, in a game, that's a type of play, if we don't make it, we end up losing the game. And I think you're right. I think the pressure's going to be turned up on Ryan Goins a little bit this week.
I think it should be. If it didn't make a play, I still think defense is his strength.
Sure, yeah.
And everybody's going to make an error once in a while. I don't think that's the concern. But I'd really like to see a little bit more offensively from Ryan Goins. I talked to him the other last week there. He had a beautiful bunt for a base hit. Are you going to incorporate that into your game? I think he has to. Mm-hmm. He's not a 320 hitter or a 300 hitter. He needs to do those little things. That day he did that. He also lined a single in the left. It was a nice 2-for-4 day. He played good defense. If Ryan Goins can do that, he'll be very, very valuable to this club. But if he's not getting his hits, and again, I'm just watching at-bats, he's had some good at-bats, but I think I need to see a little bit more offensively here before he's handed the job. This isn't a guy that's played in the big leagues for 6 years. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that's just got his feet wet.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Neil Wolk, whose Twitter handle is JFan. Joe, he's got a good question. What is the chance Moises Sierra platoons with Lynn at first base this year? I got to tell you, the most impressive hitter I've seen in three or four days here, both in games and in batting practice. And I know batting practice is only batting practice, but other than Jose Bautista, it might be Moises Sierra. He's making hard contact all the time.
I don't think there's any question. Moises Sierra is on this club as we speak, March 11th. He'll have to really tank it these next couple weeks. I've seen a lot of good things from Moises Sierra. I think he's going to be an okay outfielder if needed. I don't think he's going to be a gold glover. Everybody said defense isn't his strength. He's got an arm like you wouldn't believe, so that's a nice asset out there if he can go get the ball. But he's had some good at-bats. He's hit some balls on the screws, hit the ball hard. I don't think there's a way right now that Moises Sierra does not go north.
Jason and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Jason?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. First of all, just welcome to Joe. Again, as the previous caller said, my condolences to you at this difficult time. But it's great to see you join the crew, and I've enjoyed you so far. My question is obviously about Santana and how it might affect the team if they are unsuccessful. I've noticed that, you know, there was this story that they all tweeted a picture to him, and Jose has been kind of outspoken about his desire to see him join the club on more than one occasion. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, for a team that's struggling to get its feet under itself and live up to, you know, some of the hype that we all still really inside have, do you think that it could be a difficult blow right at the beginning of spring training, or sorry, at the beginning of the season? And I'm going to hang up and listen to what you got to say.
Okay, well, here's the thing. If the Toronto Blue Jays are unsuccessful at getting Irvin Santana, are a lot of people going to think this is a failure? I think a lot of people would say, like, you know, darn, yeah, we could have used him. But if Drew Hutchison makes the club and he kind of emerges and maybe wins 10 or 11 games, you know, maybe some expectations you don't really have for a guy like that, but he does. And then let's say J-Hap regains his health and he is your fourth or fifth starter and he wins some games. All of a sudden, it's all good. We don't know what the future holds. I think, yeah, psychologically, is it a bit of a failure? Yeah, I'm sure guys want Irvin Santana here to solidify. I think everybody does, the fans included. If not, you need guys to emerge. Any team that wins and has success at any level, especially at the major league level, you need your horses to perform, and you need some people to emerge that you really didn't expect to have really good years, to have real solid years. So that's what this team's going to need to do, and we've said it, in this division, you can't have too many letdowns. We can't have a handful of guys not have good years.
And I've got to tell you that when I was sitting in with Buck and Jerry in the broadcast booth on Sunday, one of the questions Buck asked me was, well, can you see a player emerging? Who's a guy that may be your breakout player? And I was making the point that, to me, one of the most interesting players in this on this whole team right now, and one of the most interesting situations is the bullpen. Because Casey Jansen, we talked to Casey yesterday, he's healthy, his shoulder feels better, he expects to be on the mound tomorrow. But I think that at some point, and I believe the Jays will have to trade for a pitcher if they're serious. I think that's where it's going. And I think at some point you may see one of those two arms moved out of the bullpen as part of a package, maybe the focal point of the package, because I'm looking around this team. You can't take Jose Bautista and trade him. I think we now see that. I think that creates – you don't want to take away from your offense because that's what you have going for you. I think maybe we may be in a position where that's where Alex Anthopoulos taps into the bullpen and makes a trade. Because, Joe, I think he needs another arm in here. And if it isn't Irvin Santana, he needs another arm in here.
Yeah, and it would have to be the trade route because there's not any other quality arms out there right now. So, yeah, that's possible. And 100%, you can't touch that lineup. That's what you have to count on. That's your bread and butter right now. But at the same time, we know generally pitching and defense is going to win you a division. So you have to shore up, I think, especially that rotation. And, hey, there is a little overabundance of arms there. Maybe pawn off one or two of them. You hate to trade good young arms, but remember, this team is in a win-now mode. And if you're going to win now, you might as well go for it.
This is a Tigers lineup today. Ian Kinsler leading off and hitting at second base. Rajai Davis, former Blue Jay, in left field. Miguel Cabrera at first base. Victor Martinez DHing. Torrey Hunter in right. Austin Jackson in center. Don Kelly at third. Brian Holiday behind the plate. And Eugenio Suarez at shortstop. That's some good hitters in there.
It's going to be a good lineup. It looks like we got a lot of regulars in there. It'll be fun to watch.
This is Justin Verlander's first start of the spring. You've been around this team. What makes Justin Verlander so special beyond the fact that he's got Justin Verlander stuff?
He's a freak.
He is, isn't he?
He is so good. I think Justin Verlander is a guy. Well, yeah, number one, yes, he is a freak. He's so blessed with his abilities. But anybody can touch 100 miles an hour at time like he was doing in his phenomenal years there. With that curveball and with that changeup, he's got three. He kind of reminds me a little bit of a Pedro Martinez. Three quality pitches in the mid to upper 90 fastball, really sharp curveball, really good changeup, and locates them a lot of times. And when pitchers have that kind of quality stuff and puts them where they want to, it's almost unhittable. And that's the way Justin Verlander was for a while. His health has been pretty good. He had a surgery just before the offseason here. It looks like he's going to be back. But he's such a power arm, and I think he's got a real nice delivery. He's got a repeatable delivery. He's very fluent. And, boy, the one thing with Justin Verlander, he's logged a ton of innings the last number of years. Is that a little bit of a red flag? Maybe a concern into the future? Maybe, but, boy, has he proved to be pretty sturdy.
Joe, it's been really good of you to join us today. I really appreciate it. I'm really, really looking forward to hearing you this year and working with you this year.
Awesome. Thanks, Jim. My pleasure.
Joe, thanks so much. Joe Siddle, who will be in the booth with Jerry Howarth and Mike Wilner this year, and in fact, they will have the call of the game this afternoon, the Detroit Tigers, the Toronto Blue Jays, Grapefruit League action from Lakeland, Florida. As the sun breaks out, we'll have the game at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jim Price, Tigers analyst, will join us as the Jeff Blair Show continues from Lakeland, brought to you by Rogers Check-In, another Rogers Small Business Advantage. This is the Jeff Blair Show.